breathing again. Today we're going to be talking with self-esteem expert Patricia Noel. She's a speaker and an author of a new book called Good With Me, A Simple Approach to Real Happiness from the Inside Out. We're going to talk today about the importance of self-esteem in the disease of addiction. Patricia specializes in teaching people to experience long-lasting, real happiness from the inside out by feeling good about themselves just because, and to stop defining their value by what they have done or not done, and what they have or don't have in terms of materialistic things. She is a licensed mental health counselor, certified addictions professional, and the founder of Focus One, an outpatient substance abuse treatment program, which has been licensed by the state of Florida since 1989. For 26 years, she's helped thousands of troubled individuals from all walks of life discover the secret to real happiness from the inside out instead of from the outside in. And she knows firsthand that being good with me and happy for real is easier than you think. So today we're going to talk to Patricia and find out about a simple approach to real happiness from the inside out. Hi, Patricia.
Hello, Wynn. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's nice. You know, you and I think, got started about the same time, about 25 years ago, maybe. And I was one of the first people in the country to write about self-esteem as the cause of addiction. Now, as I understand it, you believe the same thing.
I definitely do. I think it's the root and the foundation of it.
Where did you come up with this idea and when that got you started on this mission of yours?
Well, I had an aha moment, if you will, as I was counseling and treating people with addiction, and sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't, and I wondered why it wasn't working when it didn't, and what's going on. And what I realized is that there was a common thread running through everyone, and if I started to focus on that common thread, it was making a difference. And that common thread was the lack of self-esteem.
Absolutely. Now, you say that there are two types of esteems, and would you tell us about those two types, how they differ, and what's important about knowing the difference?
Absolutely. I discovered that what we were doing as professionals, as well as probably parents and teachers and so on, is that when we were teaching other dependent esteem, and what I mean by that is that I esteem myself only when I'm esteemed by someone else, or someone else likes me, or I've done something phenomenal, I've done something good, I've aced a test, or accomplished something. And so we were saying, wow, set your goals and accomplish your goals and you'll feel good about who you are, instead of teaching individuals to feel good about who they are from the inside out just because they exist, not because of what they've done or who they know or what they have. And that is different, and that's why I call it other dependent esteem, because it comes from outside of us, and when it comes from outside of us, it doesn't belong to us, so therefore it can come and go.
And if low self-esteem is the cause of the disease of addiction, you wouldn't be able to be very successful if the only time that you felt good about yourself was someone from the outside telling you that you were good.
Absolutely, Lynn. And what happens, my definition of addiction might be just a little bit different, but I think it describes it well for my purposes of the two esteems. It's being dependent upon someone or something outside of you to make you feel good, or at least a little bit better.
Okay. Okay, I'll tell you my definition of addiction.
Yes.
My definition is, if you come to discover, find out, or whatever, that some behavior of yours is not good and it's hurting yourself or someone you esteem, someone you love, and for whatever reason you can't stop it, then you're addicted to that behavior. How does that fit in with your thinking?
I think the two kind of go hand in hand, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
So now both of us have defined addiction. I believe it's an illness. I believe that it is a spiritual illness, and I believe that only a spiritual treatment can cure it, that so many of the common ways of trying to treat addiction in the community these days just don't get the job done. How do you feel about spiritual treatment of addiction?
I agree. I heard this saying somewhere, and I don't remember where I heard it, but God doesn't make any junk.
Right.
And so I think that it is an inner spiritual connection that we're valuable just because we exist, not because of what we do or have.
Right.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry, I jumped in there.
That's quite all right. Go right ahead.
Okay, so I wrote a book once called The Four Questions, four spiritual questions that if you can answer and put into practice will make all the difference in your life. And they relate to self-esteem. The questions are, who am I? Where did I come from? What am I doing here? Where am I going when I'm done? Now, if you answer the questions the way I do, you can't help but have a great self-esteem. And the way that I answer them is, who am I? I am a child of God. Where did I come from? I came from God. What am I doing here? I'm here to live out my purpose, my mission in life as a result of what God has intended for me. And where am I going when I'm done? I'm going back to God. So if a person believed that, their self-esteem would be so high that they wouldn't be looking around for all the things that addictions bring to make them feel better. And that's the basis for what I think about addiction. Do you like that concept?
Yes, Lynn. And that's where the discovery of other dependent esteem also ties into that, because I see other dependent esteem and the lack of real self-dependent esteem coming from what I call the four attachments. The four attachments are the need for approval from others, the need to look good, the need to be right, and the need to control everything. And so when we don't feel good about ourselves from the inside out, and I think that is that gift from God that we're all, that's our spiritual connection. And when we don't have that feel-good feeling about who we are, then we're so dependent upon other people liking us, and we worry so much about what they think of us that things that we become addicted to, you know, the alcohol, the drugs, chocolate cake, whatever it is, then become necessary for us in order to have some relief from our own thinking about who we are.
Yeah, I think you got it just right. You talked about one of the attachments. Do you want to be right, or do you want to be happy? That's difficult for a lot of people to not want to be right, isn't it?
It is. And yet, if we really stop and think about it, not everyone is going to like us. There's a difference in some people's thinking or experiences or what they're expecting of us. So to have to be liked by almost everyone is setting ourselves up to fail. It's an impossible feat to acquire, and so when people don't like us, we internalize that and feel even worse about who we are, as opposed to being good with who we are, and that's okay.
Yeah. What does good with me mean to you personally?
Good with me means that I like who I am from the inside out just because I am. I was born. I exist.
Yeah.
And I think good thoughts about me as a person.
Right. Now, the third question that I talked about, what am I doing here, I think is the most critical of the four questions with respect to whether or not you're addicted or not. And the reason for that is that God gave you a special purpose. And if you can discover what that is, and I teach people how to do that in my book, Freedom from Addiction, and then apply that to your life, your self-esteem will rise dramatically because you're doing what you were created to do. Not just a job or taking it easy if you have money, but actually doing something. And most all of them have to do with helping other people in some way. We all can help other people in some way. And to a great extent, that is our mission in life, is to help others. You like that explanation?
Yes, I agree. I remember working with a young man who was an electrician, and when he found his purpose, he said, my purpose is to provide electricity for people so that they can see in the dark. And so it can be something simple like that. It doesn't have to be, I have this worldwide mission and I have to change the world. And I believe, and my experience is, that when we depend upon others or someone or something outside of ourselves to esteem who we are, to like who we are, that gets in the way of us being able to find our passion, because we're so worried that it has to be a passion that someone else approves of, or that makes us look good, or is the right thing to be doing. And I think that we have so many people right now who don't know what they're passionate about because they're afraid to admit it and own it and be okay with it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. When you're counseling, how do you approach the subject of mission or purpose? What do you say to people about that?
I ask them to look first, especially if they're having difficulty knowing what they might be passionate about, is what would you love to be doing? How would you spend your time if you didn't need approval, if you didn't need a paycheck, if you didn't worry about what other people were thinking about you? What would you like to do in life? What would you do to make a difference?
Well, you know, Patricia, that's very similar to the question that I ask my people to think about, which is, if I had no limitations, not financial or educational or any other kind, because in truth, in reality, we don't have limitations except for what we put on ourselves. And if I didn't care what anybody else thought, not my parents, not my children, not my business associates or my friends, I do with my life that on ending, I would have thought, this is the best thing that I could do to help other people, and then wait on the answer.
Yes, I agree with that. I think the biggest roadblock to change, excuse me, is the fear of what others think and how we compare ourselves to others and the negative thinking that is so ingrained in so much of our society. And then the final thing, the biggest hurdle that I see, is it's almost that we have to have self-esteem, real self-dependent esteem, in order to admit that we don't have it, and then to free ourselves up to be able to move forward and do the things that we really would love to do in life.
Yeah, I think fear is a really terrible problem, and that the Bible says, be anxious of nothing, and most people can't do that. They worry about things that will never happen to them, and when they're worrying, they're in a negative thinking type situation, and they can't create. So getting rid of fear is a real big spiritual step, and a hard one, I think.
I do agree with you. And so what I focus on is, instead of focusing on the fear, I just ask my clients to just let the fear be there. Because whether you do what you're afraid of doing or not, the fear will be there either way. If you don't do it, you'll be afraid. If you do do it, you may be afraid. So let's move forward with just small steps and just let the fear be there, and now change the thinking that you're doing to something positive. What is something good that could come out of this? What is good right now at this very moment? Let's find just some little thing to focus on instead of the fear.
Back when I was practicing medicine as a family physician, about 35% of my patients came to me with complaints of anxiety or depression. And both of those symptoms, I found, are symptoms of the disease of addiction. And both of them relate to stress in the environment. Tell our audience what connection you make between stress and addiction.
Yes, that's a very good fact and note to make. First of all, I think stress is overrated and misunderstood. I see it as an outcome of the four attachments, being worried about what other people think about you and the need for approval and to look good and be right and control. But I also see it as a catch-all word today. We're so used to being stressed, and it's almost as though stress today makes us look good and we get approval for it because everyone is stressed. So we get to fit in and belong, and then my stress is worse than your stress. But also that stress is what leads to the need for relief, for escape, for a way to feel better. You know, we're more stressed as a society today than at any other time in history. And there was a time when if there was a tiger coming down the sidewalk toward us, it was important to be stressed. But today, we're facing all kinds of what I call imaginary tigers. Everything has become a tiger. Eating lunch has become a tiger. Getting up in the morning, going to work, picking the kids up from school, making dinner. And so what do we look for? Relief, escape. And that's where I believe addiction comes into play.
Is terrorism a tiger?
Absolutely.
You know, these days, you don't know if you go to the show, if somebody's going to come in there and open up with an automatic weapon, or if your kids go to school, they may not come home at night. And that's not just an irrational fear, because it happens.
Right, it does.
The world, the world is a very stressful place these days.
Well, yes, it can be, and I think, again, that is dependent upon our thinking. I personally can't control that. You know, that's those four factors. I want to control everything. I want to make sure my home for school. And that, I don't want to trivialize it. That because it's huge. And yet, at the same time, we've got to learn to have positive thinking about life. And I think, again, a bigger reason for focusing on real self-esteem. I personally see the terror of people who don't feel good about who they are, and they're looking for a place to fit in and belong, get some approval. And so if we can back up again to the foundation, it's this root, where we don't have to belong to a group. We see it even in street gangs, for example, where, okay, I don't feel like I fit in and belong anywhere else, but I can fit in and belong here, and I can get approval for being the baddest person in the group.
Well, since we both agree that self-esteem is very important as far as curing this disease, you have five ideas on how to get this process rolling. And the first one is wake up. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, wake up. Begin by listening to your own thinking about yourself. We feel bad about who we are, but it's ourselves. It's me, it's you, whomever it is, who's doing the thinking. We pay more attention to what we think others think we should be thinking, because we want that be for approval, and we worry about what others are thinking. We have to be paying attention to what I'm thinking about myself.
And your second point is, now that you're awake, notice negativity or positivity.
That's right. And remember that, first of all,
are you still there?
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, you just broke up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yes, I am here, and I'm just wanting everyone to notice whether they're thinking negative or positive thoughts about themselves. You know, and to remember that it doesn't matter what others think about you. It matters most what you think about you. So I want you to start with retraining your brain, which is number three. Shift your negative thoughts about yourself to positive thoughts about yourself. And that may be hard at first, and I get that. I've been through it. I've done it myself. I'm not teaching anyone anything that I haven't already learned for myself. So if you have difficulty with that, just think of one positive word that maybe you can repeat all day long, and just keep doing that. That brings us to number four, which is practice. And as you practice, you're going to notice what a difference a thought makes. So begin each day with a positive thought about yourself and repeat it throughout the day. And if you can't find one for yourself, ask a friend or look one up in the dictionary, but find one that you can keep repeating so that you can start to appreciate it and begin to feel that that is you. And number five, and this is important, I want you to practice with deliberate intention. And by that, what I mean is I want you to start to see yourself as special, as someone who likes who you are, as someone who is good from the inside out. You know, the practicing with deliberate intention is the way some of our great athletes practice. You know, the Michael Jordans and people who are really great as athletes weren't born that way as a great athlete. and what they did to make them better at what they do is to practice with deliberate intention. See the ball going through the hoop. And in this case, I want you to see yourself as good, as special, as confident, as esteeming yourself. And just practice doing that over and over and over. And I want you to remember that it's easier than you think.
Right. We've had the privilege of talking with Patricia Knoll. Her book is called Good With Me. I assume they can get it at Amazon.com, Pat?
Correct. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and any of the independent bookstores.
Okay. And we're out of time, but it was really great to talk to you about your work, and I hope that you continue with your mission and you find lots of success.
Thank you so much.